This is Giles Martin, and you're listening to Fab Four Free For All.
And welcome to another edition of the Fab Four Free For All, the Beatles podcast that we do when we want to, and we've been doing a lot more recently because there's been a lot of great stuff going on. I am your moderator for this episode, Mitch Axelrod, and not the episode called Mitch Axelrod, but I'm your moderator, Mitch Axelrod. And joining me, as they always do, are Rob Leonard.
Hello, everyone.
And Tony Triguardo.
Hello, folks.
And today we are going to be talking about the recently released, as of this taping, the Red Album, the Beatles 1962 to 66. We would talk about the Blue as well, but you know how we can talk. It takes 10 minutes for us to introduce ourselves. So we would be here for about 5 days talking about the Red and the Blue. So it's just going to be the Red for tonight. And this has just been released. We've known about this for about a month now. And it's a little bit weird because if everybody know, or everybody should know by now, that Now and Then was released and they needed a vehicle to put Now and Then on. And they couldn't just release it as a single, and there's no, don't get me started, people, with Free as a Bird and Real Love as an EP. It could have been, but they didn't want to do that. So they released these two albums. They found a vehicle for Now and Then to be on the Blue Album because of the 50th anniversary. It just so happened to be the 50th.
Yeah,
so,
and I'm going to just toss this out before you done with the intro. Sure. If do you think that, I don't know, there's reason for me to feel like 62 to 66 and 67, 70 might have been done anyway when they figured out it was the 50th anniversary because they, and we'll get into this, but because they were such important compilations, you know, maybe without Now and Then, there was a possibility that somebody at Capitol or Apple might have been like, wait a minute.
You know, to his credit, Rob Sheffield of Rolling Stone, who we know and is a really good guy, he wrote a really amazing article a bunch of months ago on the anniversary of these two albums, and he gave them glowing reviews because, as we all know, these two albums were the start of Beatlemania for a lot of people, really getting into the Beatles. So you're right, they might have, but knowing that Now and Then has been in the works now, as we know, for over a year as of this taping, because they started in, you know, as they Giles told us, May of 22, you know, I think they needed a vehicle for this. So I don't think they were thinking of this, of the Red and Blue. But I think once they said, hey, we have to find something else to put Now and Then on, it clicked. I think they even said it in an interview, Giles did, that it clicked and they had to, you know, they decided to do it. Now, the one thing I will say is that I'm not sure if, and we'll get to all of this when we talk about the some of the tracks, but the vinyl versus the CD, the way they did things. But I'm not sure some of it works to this extent. I'm not sure if they had like lacquers prepared,
right,
for the Red and Blue vinyl. Now the CD, you don't have to have lacquers prepared, I don't think. You could, so that's why you can do it chronologically. You can insert them because it'll, but in terms of the actual vinyl, maybe the masters were done already. And
well, but the masters would still had to have been done from the 2023.
That's true. But you also, because of the 12 new songs, which there are 12 new songs on these, you don't know how the timing would have fit if they would have done it chronologically. Because albums were a certain amount of time.
Yeah, but there's also that idea too, though, that, you know, who knows, maybe... We never know what, and it is, with all due respect to them, they, you know, they can be as secretive or as open as they like. But, you know, is it possible that maybe the Peter Jackson stuff was sent over? They got the masters for the vinyls, which you're right, are more difficult to change. Yeah. And then when the idea of what do we do with Now and Then, maybe it was, ooh, why don't we make bonus discs for the Red and the Blue, we'll tack Now and Then at the end of the new Blue album, you know, and then, like you said, redoing a CD master, that takes nothing. So who knows, you know?
I think part of it is this, you know, the Red album, you know, had 60 minutes over two CDs, and there was always a
complaint,
problem with, you know, people talking about this. They said, well, two CDs for, and it's 60 minutes and you're charging me for two CDs where you can put this on one CD, which is what they did for Beatles One. And, you know, there was like a big hooray because, hey, look, it's 79 minutes on a 79 minute CD.
Right.
So I think that's right. Part of it. You know, if you're going to have two CDs, you got to give something to get people to buy this again. You know, this is like the third time we've done a show or that has part of the Red Album Minute.
Right.
You know, and if you think about all the reissues over the years, you know, there was the first issue in 73, and then there was a colored vinyl version where they had the red, the blue, and the white albums had colored vinyl in the late 70s when colored vinyl was big. And there have been various label things over the years. So this is, if you're a collector, you probably own like 7 or 8 copies of this album. I know I do. I have the red label Capitol. I have the red vinyl. I have the original one I got, you know, in 1978. And then people have given me stuff over the years. So I own 7 copies of this on vinyl already.
Well, here's the thing, though, Rob and Tony. They always said, with as far as your point, Rob, about the two CDs, 60 minutes, you're absolutely right. But the argument was always, or I heard it was always, they didn't want to disrupt the legacy or
right.
the original album. All right, so you have two LPs, two CDs.
Got now, news for you. You have no matter what,
yep.
you have to flip a record over. You don't have to flip a CD over. So
understood.
Once you transfer an LP format to a CD format, you have changed the listening experience.
No, not the listening experience. The legacy of the original packaging.
Blah, blah, of the blah, blah, blah,
no,
blah,
no, no, that's different. That's very different.
No, I know it is.
It is so different than the listening experience.
It is. I totally agree with you, and I know where you're going. So I'm not busting your chops, but I'm just saying, as far as you know, Capitol and Apple are concerned, that argument is kind of, you know.
I know.
It's kind of flaccid, as we might say.
Well, yes. Don't even, you know, we're getting older, people. I don't want to hear the word flaccid. But anyway, if you're taking my point is, and it was going to be that if you're taking Now and Then and you're going to put it on the blue, okay, regardless of calling it 1967 to 2023. That you're still ruining the legacy of the original, even by putting on one more song. All right. But if you now go back and say, we can keep the original packaging of both and still call it 62 to 70, so to speak, and not add 23, but also add more songs. Now you're not ruining the legacy of the original packaging, but you're giving more, to Rob's point, more for the buck, more bang for the buck.
I'm going to just do the hold on a minute.
Okay.
But you still got the two vinyls that you've added another
yes.
vinyl disc to.
Yes.
Thus maintaining the integrity of the original package.
Thank you. I keep saying legacy, but you're right.
But the integrity legacy. But then you've got the CDs where you've jumbled the damn tracks and put them in exact chronological order.
But you still have the integrity of the two disc CDs, the two LPs, two CDs.
But what you've gotten that down to is that the quote legacy quote integrity is the number of discs. So does that mean that I don't know what it means, but where I'm going is
I know you still have 3 discs in each album, but you do have a gatefold for 2.
You have got a gatefold for 2, so you've maintained the cheapness of not adding another part of a cover, so you have a trifold sleeve. You know, they could have just gotten the couple from Woodstock and just made like a third trifold sleeve. Like that. But I mean, look, I'm busting Capitol Apple. I mean, they're lovely to us, and we, you know. But they've got to be called to the carpet about that past idea of, you know, we must maintain the integrity to put 62 to 66 on 2 discs. I mean, you know.
But you know what? When we get to the blue, we'll talk more about this. But I'm sorry, but I just don't get the argument that you should have renamed it 67 to 2023. That's because you put Now and Then on. Big deal.
Well, but it does. Truthfully, I wouldn't have been unhappy at all.
If they did it?
No, if they didn't do that. But if the 2023 editions using the exact same font said the Beatles, the Red Album, the Beatles,
the Blue Album, and don't give dates.
So then in 2023, you really are reinventing something historic.
There's a huge gap in between, though.
You know? No. But the point is, though, Rob, there's no date delineation.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like there's no year. We've always called them the Red and the Blue. So the idea is you're maintaining that history and that legacy of these phrases for these two compilations that are in our DNA.
Right.
And Giles's, you know, Giles talked to us. It's all so many of the interviews with Giles. He's talking about how, you know, this track listing is in his DNA, you know? So, but I think by just stripping it of its title, and using the title we all use anyway, and just call, I mean, sometimes we say, oh, 62 to 66, but come on, let's face it, it's the Red Album.
I never do. I always say
Right. And right. The Blue Album.
If they include it, and I know it's the Red Album, but if they include Free as a Bird and Real Love at the end of the Blue Album also, then I would understand that. But
right.
it's a bonus track of Now and Then, which, right. You know, you're right, Tony, you have to put it somewhere if you're going to do it. So
right.
And
right.
Plus the way they were selling it, you know, and they changed their mind since we saw the presentation back in October or the end of September, whenever it was. You know, they originally said no CD single for Now and Then, and then they said, then they changed their mind.
Yeah.
And it might have helped or hurt, I should say, the fact that they didn't get to number one in America. In Britain they did, but not in America.
Interesting.
Because, you know, our generation, as much as they're trying to sell downloads and streaming like Taylor Swift fans, you know, we still prefer a real disc in our hands. So
I think that was part of it. Disc in our hands and flaccid. Why are we doing this?
That's why I said
disc.
Okay.
Disc.
Oh, disc. Okay.
Cuh.
My ears are going too.
Yeah. My ears.
Oi.
You know what, though? And I'm going to say something now, Rob. You brought up Taylor Swift, and this is not about Taylor Swift. This is actually about modern day artists.
Right, how it works.
Well. Also, Giles told us and many others that the purpose of the MAL, Machine Audio Learning software, for this project and for every project, but especially for this, because Giles said he was really proud of the Red and the Blue, more than Now and Then. Mm-hmm. I think he said that he wanted the Beatles to sound their age, not the age of the album, which makes a lot of
sense. Well, he wanted them to sound their age as they were now.
Well, no, right. Their age at the time of recording.
Right.
Not the age of the albums, 50 or 55 or whatever it is.
Right.
No, because the Red and the Blue are 50, but the songs contained within are 55 years old already, whatever. So, and he's right. So that's why, you know, I think these releases are important, because if a current artist like Taylor Swift puts out a new album, lately she's been just redoing her old albums for business reasons and money reasons, but that's fine.
Smart
but even
person.
If she puts out whomever, whatever current artist puts out a single or an album, they sound their age because that's their age now. The Beatles have been gone for over 50 years. So, you know, they need help sounding their age when they recorded these songs. And obviously the MAL software helps with that. And I think it works really well.
I think if Giles Martin decided to put auto tune on things, you know, that
different
might be
story.
A little different. Or
different let's, story.
Yeah, I know. But that's, you know, I think when we talk about comparing like to current day artists and the Beatles, you know, the Beatles are always going to have a certain timelessness about it. Only because of how, you know, the whole thing is, you know, 55 years old, 60 years old. It's like in our DNA, as you said before. No, so.
Yeah, but that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that Taylor will put out an album tomorrow, and she's what, 35, 30? I don't even know how old she is.
33.
All right, she's 33 years old. she's going to sound 33 years old because she put it out tomorrow and she just recorded it.
Right.
But with the Beatles, even though they're in our DNA, some of these recordings, especially the early two-track ones, sound like they're 55 years old.
Well, right. They sound like they're 55 years old because
you don't get the energy of the Beatles when they were 21, 22.
Well, what it is that
what you do now,
even if you take some of the other, you know, and I'm not going to go by the idea that, you know, there was the world was dead musically from when Buddy Holly died to the day the Beatles showed up, you know.
Right.
There was some great rock and roll in there. And even if you take just, you know, and I'm pulling something random, you know, a Ricky Nelson single, or you take Connie Francis' Lipstick on Your Collar, you know, which is, or It's My Party. There's something about those songs and the production value. And even though they're really cool songs, or you know, whether you like them or you don't, but production value wise, no matter what you did to them, unless you stripped off the nyah, 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 in Lipstick on Your Collar, or the horns in It's My Party, or the whatever, that those songs are still going to sound of their time. The thing about the Beatles was that from a musical standpoint, they were a garage band. You know, they're two guitars, bass, drums, and occasionally George Martin helping out on a piano, you know, which could still be some of the bands that era could have had a piano. But so the thing about the Beatles sound is that them being trapped in not sounding their age now, not sounding young, was really strictly because of the production value, strictly because of you couldn't get a modern sounding Beatle record from 1964. So I think that just the fact that this software has affected the Beatles, you know, the probably the most prized catalog of music in history. And we talk an awful lot about them.
Yeah, we do.
Means that you could now apply that kind of software, this kind of idea, and modernize these recordings. So that really,
they're modernized as much as they are just, you know, the first album's two track, basically. You know, you really can't do much recording wise compared to what they did with Sergeant Pepper. They took the four track and they
would
take the four track and put onto the next four track on the track one, and then they work on that, and then they overdubbed a lot, and then that was separated in 2017 when Pepper comes out. This machine takes stuff that they overdubbed, but you couldn't really separate because it's a two track, and then it became a four track, and even then they started to do double track vocals and they started to add things in there. So, you know, the nothing's changed with that, and I think that's the important part.
But
you know, that's the difference.
But I'm my argument is going to be along this line. Sergeant Pepper for its eight tracks, even Sergeant Pepper for its 2017 remix and re-recording, or you know, re-release, whatever. I'm gonna pit We Can Work It Out from this 2023 box set. And I'm going to say that We Can Work It Out sounds fresher and more relevant than Sergeant Pepper does.
I would agree with that.
You know, the older...
I wouldn't compare them. I do like the remix of everything from the Rubber Soul sessions on this box set.
Absolutely. Sounds more alive, sounds more relevant. I think if you played a kid, you know, girl... or Drive My Car,
right?
Or, you know, whatever, and said, well, check this out. They've never heard the bands before. Check this out. And now I'm going to play you like Lovely Rita and Lucy in the Sky. And they're going to go, oh, that other band's hipper.
Well, I'm not sure that one thing that Rubber Soul, and this is one of the things when I was listening to it, the new tracks, the new remixes from the Rubber Soul sessions. You know, that album's had two mixes that we know more than the other albums. I mean, you had a 65 stereo, which was very, you know, weird. And then the 87 remix that George Martin did which wasn't bad, but right. when I hear these new versions, I'm like, whoa. And this is where the technology comes into me,
definitely.
For me, is that it sounds really intense as a new mix, where the other ones, not that they're bad and they're of their time, but this is very impressive. You know, that I when I heard We Can Work It Out at Day Tripper, I was like, whoa. And then the rest of the Rubber Soul stuff, I was like, you know, I can't wait for Rubber Soul to get redone. But well, you know, this is one of the few albums out there, and Help would be the other one, that, you know, had a remix, you know, from the 65 version, which, you know, they were still learning stereo in 65, how to mix
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
So that, and to me, that's important. You know, We Can Work It Out sounds fantastic. You
well,
know.
You know, it's funny you say, Tony, to your point about production values, we've gotten used to the Beatles production at this point of, you know, 55 years of it. And that's one of the things that people are not complaining about, but discussing in terms of Now and Then. They're saying the Beatles sound too modern in Now and Then, even though that's what they wanted to sound. Well, they are. Right. They want, obviously, that's what you wanted, because it is a 2023 Beatles song, and Paul and Giles did 2023 production. But people are like, oh, it just sounds too modern. I've heard that argument. I'm like, but that's not an argument, because the Beatles were 55 years old. You're used to the production. Of course they're going to have a modern what is Paul going to do? Go back and go to Abbey Road and record the new stuff in two-track? I mean, you know, what do you want?
That's a good point. Yeah, they also have it Now and Then, that great orchestra bit, which is just really, if you, especially towards the end, that to me is the whole song. It really helps.
They had a great orchestra bit with Eleanor Rigby, Rob.
Right, but there's a difference, because it's the orchestra's driving the song the way it did in I Am the Walrus. It has that same George Martin pushing of the music. It's not just listen to the Anthology 2 version of I Am the Walrus and then listen to the Magical Mystery Tour version. The way it pushes the song forward and adds to it. And, you know, Paul likes to always say, well, let's add an orchestra. Well, this time it worked really well for Now and Then, and I can't really complain about it. And I actually think the ending of Now and Then, the way it ends with the orchestra, is just fantastic. So,
yeah.
But I happen to like these new mixes on the Red album. There's a lot on it. Most of it says 2023 mix on it. So, you know, you have to pay attention. And the ones that didn't say 2022 mix. So,
yeah,
you know, these are as new as you're going to get for these.
I made my own mix of Now and Then at the end when the orchestra's coming in. I mixed in the soundtrack to Richard III.
Really?
And that just, yeah, it's very cool. Just anyway.
Now and Then, the service of the
state. I did a mix where I did Romeo and Juliet.
There you go. Just like Romeo and Juliet. Just
no, not that song. You know.
I'm sorry, but I mixed in it. I really wanted
to. Deny my father, refuse thy name.
I tried finding King Lear. I only found an Abbott and Costello radio show. So at the end, I'm just. Hey,
who's on first?
Who's exactly. on first?
What's going on?
Everybody's on first. Everybody's on first. Everybody's exactly. on first. Yeah. All right, we've
everybody's
degraded.
On third. Everybody's on third.
Everybody's
on third. I don't give a damn. I don't give a damn.
Oh, someone's anyway. Stealing this bit. Someone's yeah. going to do that. We anyway. Want credit, whoever steals it.
So why don't we do this? Why don't we discuss some of what we thought were some of the really highlights. We've talked a little bit about some of them. We'll talk about some of the highlights. We'll talk about some of the not-so-highlights, because I don't really think there's, on this one, I don't think there's any real lowlights. I think there's not-so-highlights, if that makes sense.
I'll go with that, yeah.
And then
there's a couple things I'm like, why didn't they do this? Why did they do that?
Okay. We'll get okay. there. But yeah. then at the end, what we're going to do is we are going to talk about the 12 extra songs, and well, we're going to talk about whether we feel they were the right choice. Now, we're just the three of us, so we know for a fact that it was the estates picking a whole bunch of songs and they whittled them down. So it's them. It's not Apple. It's not Universal. It's actually the principals involved. So
Which is Apple.
Wouldn't it be funny if it was none of that and it's just some guy named Phil Schwartz in, like, you know, Indiana? They're like, oh, hey, Phil, could you pick the 12 songs we're going to have?
Alan Steckler's son.
Alan Steckler's son.
Alan Steckler Jr.
A real Steckler.
Steckler for a whole bunch of stuff.
Steckler for a lot. Sorry.
No, but we'll.
No disrespect, man, Alan's son, if you're a fan of the show. Anyway.
But Alan Steckler is, if you don't know, Alan Steckler helped Alan Klein. Right. Pick the original track listings from these two compilations.
Right, so, right.
But anyway, we'll talk about those extra songs and maybe some that we think should have been off of it and some we will replace them with in for each one of us. So, Tony, let's start with you. What's some of the highlights of this collection?
There are so many, really.
That's okay. Go ahead.
All My Loving is the first one that just, all of it kicked my butt. I was really moved by when I first got the single, or, you know, first heard the single. It was great to hear Now and Then Again. We had the pleasure of hearing it before, but Love Me Do, I thought, sounded great.
Stereo,
but yeah. All My Loving, if there's anyone, anybody out there who's going to tell me that Ringo Starr doesn't swing, I want you to come at him and I will take you. What's that?
You're like Muhammad Ali?
Yeah, no, but seriously, man, anybody who says that, like, Ringo Starr literally can't swing, you listen to All My Loving and it's always been there, obviously, but the new remix, first of all, the guitar solo sounds so incredibly sweet in the new remix, but Ringo swings, you feel the swing in his playing, just fully and completely. And I love the fact that the last note rings. Yeah, it just rings. It stays going for a bit. I feel fine. Wait, again.
Hold on. You know what? You gave me an idea here. You just said the first thing that struck you, right?
Yeah.
All right. Let's just do that. Then we'll come back to you and you'll talk about some of the highlights. Rob, what was the first thing that struck you out of the first 10 songs, whatever? Was there anything on those that just said to you, holy crap, we're in for a ride here?
I saw her standing there.
No, that's on the album. That's one of the new songs. We're not talking about that yet.
Oh,
I'm sorry. I didn't realize we were differentiating between what was okay. I thought we were just talking about the whole thing.
Okay. All right.
Because all of those, I'm thinking anything, whether it's previously on the album or of the new tracks.
Okay. Right.
It's all 2023. All
right, then Rob, yeah. then you're fair game. Go ahead.
Okay. I saw her standing there. It's become such a song over the years being heard. It, you know, if you want to get a party started, you play that. If you want to get
your party again,
your parties are happiness is a warm gun.
That's right. Yes. If you go to a ball game, they'll play that. Or if Paul's at a Yankee game, well, good. We're going to play that. But to me, we've heard this song so many times over the years. And the first thing I noticed when hearing it is, everything is more audible, but it's not fighting each other. It's a great mix. This is such a great song to begin with, and it's turned into other things over the years, like I said. So to me, that was the first one that, okay. Like, and it's the third song. I should say Love Me Do, the lead off track.
The great stereo version.
You hear that bass so much better now, and Ringo's drums. And that's part of the whole album is, you know, this is what you hear differently. But that song, even John's harmonica, it rings through. Not that it sounded bad before. It just sounds a lot better in this new stereo mix, which we should say is the Ringo drumming version, not the Andy White version.
I want to talk about that. Thank you for bringing that up. Because even before I give my choice, perfect segue. Is anybody really bothered that they changed out the Andy White album version, even though they gave us the Ringo on the B side of Now and Then? Because we understand probably why they did that, because they wanted Ringo to lead off this album and Ringo to be on the Now and Then to take us out, for the blue. Is anybody really upset that the Andy White version is nowhere to be found now?
No.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just.
I will say this: the Andy White not performance, but the version they did on September 11th is probably a better version than the September 4th version, because Paul's voice is a little
nervous.
A little nervous, where on September 11th, that version isn't. But you want the version with Ringo's drumming. So I understand that. But then again, Ringo is on the September 11th version. And I like the tambourine. I like the tambourine on the song. So I'm not bothered by that. I'm bothered by a couple other things, but we'll get to that.
And yeah, I have a quick question, though, Mitch. I'm hearing conflicting things and reading conflicting things in authoritative spots. I understand the situation with both She Loves You, Love Me Do. Was Love Me Do also sourced from vinyl?
Yes.
It was. As was She Love You, She Loves You?
I can't say for sure.
I'm pretty sure She Loves You is from, it's always been from a vinyl version.
Okay, but I know, but Love Me Do, it was also. I mean, they did a freaking great job.
Yeah.
But supposedly, I mean, and let's give a shout out to Andrew at Parlagram. Let's give a shout out to Andrew. But he was talking about the fact that they actually didn't even have pristine copies of the vinyl and had to de-click and denoise 45s.
Well, when it came out in 1982, it came from a vinyl version. So I don't know, you know, they made a master then. So why would they have to go get another version?
I don't know. But anyway, that was my question. But anyway, so Mitch, yours now.
All right. You know, this is weird because Love Me Do is great. But the first one for me, I shouldn't say the first. I'm going to cheat here because I'm the moderator. The Please Please Me and From Me to You just blew me away. There's little guitar bits in both that I was like, oh my God. And Ringo's snare, which Giles made very heavy in this whole collection. But wow. But the one that blew me away was the one that made them a hit in America. I Want to Hold Your Hand. I mean, the power of the boom, boom, boom. Now Ringo's drums just beat the snot out of them. And it's just, it sounds so alive when you hear it. It sounds like it should sound.
You make a great point, though, Mitch. You're saying too, it sounds so alive.
Yeah.
And you know what? We're gonna give so much credit to the EMI engineers, because you know what? Crap is crap. You know, what the MAL technology is gonna do, if it's not going to add, which it doesn't, and we know that it's not creating,
right?
And then it's just separating anything and pulling out. So the source material had to be there to begin with. The playing had to be there. The engineering had to be there to capture what was going on.
Right.
And the idea is, I feel like now it almost sounds like you're hearing the Beatles live. Like you're hearing I Want to Hold Your Hand. And like you said, wow, it's, you know, it's alive. And it's almost like you're hearing a really solid live performance in the spectrum in front of you.
Yeah.
You know, and Ringo's kit being right in there. Think about how, like, we get so psyched when we see stuff like Drop In and we see stuff like Washington Coliseum. And, you know, is it Washington Coliseum with that savage long, tall Sally?
Oh, yeah.
And Ringo beating the snot out of the kit. And you're just sitting there like pumping your fist going, Ringo, you know. Well, now you've got the opportunity to hear the band. You know, you're hearing a rock and roll band playing I Want to Hold Your Hand, you know.
It blew me away. I mean, I was like, wow.
It does have a lot of energy that, you know, is, we already know it has a lot of energy to begin with. But this is one of the advantages of this new MAL technology, is that this jumps right out at you. And speaking one thing, Tony, you just mentioned the Washington, D.C. concert. You know, if we're going to put this MAL thing, you know, let's get it on that, because that was one of the most poorly mixed things ever.
Yep.
This really weird video, film, well, whatever it was.
That's going to be another show, Rob, where we
talk. Oh, I know that, but I'm just saying.
Where we talk, the topic will be, now that we have MAL,
Yeah, well, yeah, well, yeah, but that would be my start. But I Want to Hold Your Hand jumps out. A lot of the this early stuff does. I mean, it, you know, to me, there's little guitar bits that you hear now that were mixed a little bit lower. So, you know, that's part of it too. And when Tony, when you said All My Loving, the thing I noticed is John Lennon's eighth note, you know, he's playing his guitar in eighth notes. He's not strumming it. He's playing it in He is playing it straight down like Buddy Holly would do.
Yep.
And that's incredible if you think about it. And you hear it a lot cleaner and a lot more open than in the other mixes. So I was very impressed with John's rhythm guitar playing in that.
Tony, so, let's talk a little bit more now about the good.
Well, yeah, I mean, more about the good. Just a couple of more things. Rollover Beethoven, it always bugged the bejesus out of me that when we got a rattle a lot, when George's vocal first comes in, no matter how hard they tried in previous incarnations of this, it like the whole room swells when George's vocal comes in. It's like everything fades up.
Right.
Now, with the technology being able to separate and space things out, if you force yourself to listen for it, like I did, you still hear a little tiny trace of it, but that's gone, finally, after 60 years.
But Tony, that was more on second album than on With the Beatles.
No, you could still hear it on With the Beatles.
They left it way open.
You can also on that record in particular, for the first time for me, I really got into John as a rhythm guitarist on Rollover Beethoven.
Yeah, it's great stuff.
Again, it's the live version. We can work it out. You brought up Mitch. I said great example of Giles's comments about making the track sound current. There was also some strumming after the second verse, and We Can Work It Out that I'd never heard before. Day Tripper, the opening guitars hit you in the face.
Oh, my God.
But the vocals, interestingly enough, are set back a little bit.
Yeah.
It, you know why? Because it's a guitar song. It is a guitar-based song. The drums travel. The volume pedal affected guitar work is more subtly balanced. Usually that's a little overpowering. But even though the drums are dropped back and travel, they're so much cleaner. So it's kind of like, rather than have to have those vocals in your face, now you can enjoy the vocals cleanly in the spectrum and not have them have to be all the way up. So that to me is so cool. And I'm trying to think of what else. I mean, there's so much. Hard Day's Night, the bongos are under control, which is nice. And I got a couple more.
Well, Hard Day's Night, the thing that got me a little bit is the opening chord now has a drum beat.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that threw me off the first time. I stopped it and I said, what? Because that really does change the way you hear that song. It's always been the chord with the bass note and the weirdness of how, you know, people have tried to match it all these years. And all of a sudden, oh, there's a drum beat in it,
yep.
Which was probably put in there for timing purposes. But now it's there.
Yep.
And it's like, okay.
I argue that sonically it has always been in there. Way buried in the mix. I have always felt that there was some kind of a snap in there that we were hearing subconsciously.
Well, it's a crash cymbal too.
Yeah.
Well, so I like Hard Day's Night. The mixture of the guitar and the keyboard parts are a lot more level. And also, you know, Can't Buy Me Love. You know, we always had that, you know, leftover guitar track. Well, now, basically, that leftover guitar track has been taken out. And it's only one little, like, eight bars or something where it's in there. The rest of it, it's finally been mixed out. And it sounds a lot, I don't want to say a lot better, but it sounds like it's not a mistake. You know, where in, you know, the original version that we've known and love, You always sound like, did they have another track machine go and they forgot to, you know, erase it? Right. So I'm really impressed with that. And I have to say, She Loves You. We were talking about, you know, copies from records. I happen to like what they did with it. I think it's still, if you have it from the vinyl or whatever master they got it from, it's always going to be a problem. But it sounds, I think She Loves You sounds more even with the different guitars and stuff.
I have to, maybe that was part of my not so good.
Okay.
Yeah, mine too.
That's okay. It's all right. You can.
Yeah.
For me, if I needed someone, wow.
Yeah.
As you said, Rob, I can't wait for the Rubber Soul tracks because as soon as the opening strings of that, you know, 12 string comes in, holy crap. I'm like,
yeah,
that sounds good. The harmonies on If I Needed Someone. Oh my goodness. Just like we wanted Here, There, and Everywhere harmonies, which I guess we'll talk about later because that's on here now. But the Here, There, and Everywhere Revolver harmonies were enhanced for the remix. And If I Needed Someone, wow.
Well, but go ahead, Mitch. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say it's they just sound so, again, alive, so fresh, so in your face, and so fantastic because the Beatles as three-part harmony people were just amazing. And it just shows it.
For me, it's really funny you talk about that, Mitch, in terms of like Rubber Soul and vocal harmonies and stuff. Michelle has never been one of my favorite Beatles songs. Just never has been. I went into this just like letting it flow like any other track on the record. And I was captivated by it. I was appreciating the instrumentation, the backing, and the vocal harmonies. You know, it was kind of like, all right, you know, no, it's not the Beach Boys, but vocally, my God, the vocal arrangements and the vocal stuff, and even like the most playful, and no pun intended, I mean, we're going to joke about it, but the most playful vocal arrangement on here is Girl.
Yes.
You know, Tony, you know, I've been wanting to say this for a long time, and I'm going to say it. I don't care.
Uh-oh.
No, I'm going to say it because I wanted to joke with Giles about it, but considering the circumstances he just went through, I didn't want to do it. And he looked very tired and probably didn't want to hear it. But on any other given day, he probably would have laughed. But I keep saying that the background tits, you know, tit, those feel like they're in my face now.
Yes.
So you're right.
You wrote that one down like 2 weeks ago.
I wrote that one down the minute I heard this.
I mean, John's, but interestingly enough, not to be funny, but John's lead vocal.
Oh, my God.
Is less in your face than past versions.
But see, I don't
it
think
comes
so.
In,
it sounds beautiful.
But I think that if you looked at a waveform.
Yeah, yeah.
John's vocal differentiating from the rest of the track,
yeah,
is going to not be there as much.
Okay.
It's so clean and it's so fresh that when the vocal comes in and then the division of vocals in the stereo spectrum is incredible. After the she's cool, that little bit, that next girl is placed very specifically in the stereo spectrum, and it sounds awesome. And it's just like everything he did with the voices on that song, it was almost as though, and I know, you know, maybe he does work, but it was almost like Giles like rolled up his sleeves and went, this is going to be a fun one.
Maybe.
And it just was fun. It's just a wonderful vocal. But anyway, yeah, man, Rubber Soul is going to kill us because the vocals kill us.
Well, you know. Speaking of Girl, the first where he breathes in, wow, it's that really the second one wasn't as much, but the first one, which was probably done, everyone said, oh, that was because they were smoking pot. No, they were using it as a percussion instrument, and he breathes in, and to me, that you hear it so clearly on this record. Well, this mix. I stopped what I was doing and went back to listen to it again.
I always I always think of it as it's like she takes his breath away. That's how I always went with the
That's a good one too. I like that.
I always think of that.
You but know. The for me, help. If you listen in headphones, people, because it's weird. Because I was listening in my car, and you hear little things that you think are lower in the mix and not in the mix, and then I heard it on headphones, and you say, no, everything's there. Like, and I love her. I was telling Tony the claves were a little lower in the mix when I listened to my car. I listened in headphones. No, they're not. They're perfect. It sounds really great. But on help, if you listen in your left ear, the hi-hat, the opening hi-hat of, you know, help, boom, 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 and it's just amazing. And I didn't get that before because everything was always like, you know, panned for karaoke so you can, you know, you put on the left channel and then you could, you have no vocals in the right. You could sing to that. But that was amazing. Day Tripper, again, just blew me away. The opening sounds like it has a little more reverb on it. And it just blows you away right from the beginning.
And it's back to that idea, too, of Ringo as a swinger, man.
Ringo
swings.
We've said this on every remix because they've basically punched up the bass and drums for all of the remixes. But I mean, and we've given Ringo his due like crazy because, you know, anybody who doesn't think Ringo's a great player is just not listening. But wow, I mean, this is basically the greatest hits, and he is just, he's great.
And one thing about the help thing, where they go at the end,
it goes
even longer by a second or so than on the Love album. Yeah. So in the version that's on the help album, you know. It sort of, there's a little quick fade at the end. So, you know what song really got me? And I Love Her.
Yes. And
I'm not used to hearing the echo version for that, or I Feel Fine, because we're used to hearing the British versions, which are clean. And all of a sudden, now you're hearing the stereo for And I Love Her, and it's just...
You hear George's guitar solo, and to me, it's almost like they took it out and then put it back in, which I don't think they did, but it sort of sounds like they did something to it, because it just, there's a perfect sound to that guitar solo that in the sound of the new mix, where you didn't maybe notice it as much in the older mix. I was really impressed with And I Love Her. There's so many bits in that.
Yeah.
You know, again, John's rhythm guitar in that is fantastic. You know, and George, of course, you know, really should be listed as co-writer. He came up with the riff. He came up with the guitar solo in the middle. He's the one who said, why don't we do this? When they first recorded And I Love Her, and it sounded not what we know and love now. So I was very impressed with that remix along the way.
Even the string plucking in Yesterday is just so, it's so clean. Now, there are a couple of times when maybe some things get too clean, but we'll get there. But to me, the ones I mentioned were just amazing. I mean, what do you say? I mean, everything's amazing because it's the Beatles. But so let's go around now, Tony, and give us some of your not so highlights. And it's tough because this, everything.
Well, it's tough. And again, you know, I go by this argument. I go by the argument that, okay, not so much likes. She Loves You. I'm not feeling it. I'm feeling
a little flat to me.
It's a little flat, and I'm somehow feeling overmodulation in the vocals. I somehow feel like some of the vocals are too sharp at the end, like going towards the end of the track. Almost like,
but again, source material is what it is.
Okay, but like I'm saying, again, you know what they did with Now and Then, and then, you know, but I look at it this way. It's hard for me to sit there and talk about the dislikes. It's not to be like, oh, I love everything. I'm not going that route. Song choices on the bonus, that we could talk about.
Well, we're not doing that yet.
But when it comes to the mixes, to the sonic aspect of what was done, after all these years and having these be collections that I got in 73 and knowing these collections up, down, and sideways, and playing the bejesus out of these growing up, to have both of them, and especially 62 to 66, with a new, and it was funny because Giles kind of bristled a little bit when we were kind of saying, well, it's a brand new listening experience. And he kind of danced a little bit around that phraseology. And I'm not sure why he doesn't embrace that idea. The Beatles.
Because he's not a fan. Like he's not a, he's a fan, but he's not like us, like crazy where he.
Well, I think
a different thing for him.
But I think what he's trying to do is he's trying to not make it jarring. He's right. Trying to not make it a new.
Well, I think what they're trying also to do is so many people have, you know, the sequence of sides 1, 2, 3, and 4 of this and the Blue Album embedded in our heads.
Yes,
so
we do. But
I think when Giles talks about, and I don't want to talk for him, but I think he doesn't want to take away. Well, we changed, we added songs in there, and now it's different.
I don't think he
wants that part out there.
I understand
that. Apple does either.
But I think he also was bristling a little bit even over the idea of that by doing these remixes, he's making a new listening experience. And I think that for the hardcore fans, the whole idea is to have a new listening experience. You have an old friend you haven't seen. I mean, I'm not using examples. Somebody commented today. They had a friend I hadn't seen in years, walked up to me. I'm the same person, but it was like, oh my God, look at you with the beard. You know, it was a new thing on an old friend, you know, and it was kind of like a fun moment of, oh, look at that. You've got a beard. You know, you took these old friends that we've had for years and years and years, and you dressed them up a little bit and you made them look a little different.
Now, he doesn't want to hear that, though.
He doesn't want to, but
right. He wants to hear, Tony, that not a new listening experience, but he wants to hear that the old experience got better.
It's the same. It's semantics.
Yeah,
I think was a band with Zach Starkey. I know, but but it's semantics. It's the idea being that you know, no, you of course when you or I hear Hard Day's Night, we're gonna feel a certain way, whether right. It's the live version at Washington Coliseum, whether it's us going to see the Fab Four do a great version of it, you know. But nothing's like the Beatles recording. So I'm not comparing the Fab Four to the Beatles.
No,
but the point is, we walk away from hearing A Hard Day's Night by the Beatles and we feel a certain way. Nothing's going to change that. Whether I'm putting on the mono single with the capital swirl on it or you know, the UA black label vinyl album, or the new 2023 mix, I'm still going to feel like, oh my God, it's Hard Day's Night. But this is giving us sonically a new way to experience these tracks.
Right.
Right. Right.
So to me, I I'm not saying like, oh, I love, but I'm not going to pick Ayun and go, well, I didn't think that this was as good in this version as this version, because well, I do that with the albums. I do that with when you give me Revolver and you're saying like, well, this is the new version of Revolver. I'm going to maybe do that because I've got to decide whether I'm putting on the new Revolver, the old Revolver.
Right, right.
I will say this. This will be my go-tos for 62 to 66 and 67, 70. Why? Because I do have the sequence in my head, but it's really fun to hear that sequence brought into a new era, brought into a new listening idea. When I want to hear the old one and I'm feeling really nostalgic, yeah, of course, I'm going to go pull out my French colored vinyl from 79, you know. But as for really kind of getting down and dirty with, I don't like this, it was hard for me to hear anything and go, eh, I didn't really like that.
Well, my problem with, you know, if you're going to add the drum beat to A Hard Day's Night, which I have no real problem with, it does change it a little bit how you open that clean sounding chord. But then why would you include the original mistake in Please Please Me in stereo, which obviously was a mistake that they didn't care about because in 1963 stereo in Great Britain wasn't, you know, barely there. So why not now go back and clean that up and have it not be a mistake in stereo for this album. I'm not saying, you know, when you get to go back to Please Please Me in a couple of years, you know, you don't leave it. But why on this record, you know, if you're already changing some things about these songs, why wouldn't you fix it so the mistake is not there?
There may be an answer to that. I don't know for sure. There may be an answer to that, Rob.
It's only on the stereo. If it was on both the mono and the stereo, okay, I understand. There's a lot of mistakes. And, you know, Dizzy Miss Lizzy, even though it's not on this record, has a mistake in it, you know? Right. You know, and would I like to see that taken out when they get to the Help album? Yes. Because it's a definite mistake that they can easily fix.
But that's a vocal mistake, because they did fix the edits of She Loves You, This Boy, and Roll Over Beethoven.
Right.
So much cleaner. So that's a vocal mistake versus an edit.
Yeah, but but it was a mixing mistake, because when they made the mono of Please Please Me, it was clean. It was, correct.
But the catch is, Rob, to do that, if I'm not mistaken, to correct that, you've got to fly something in from another part of the song.
Sure.
But here's the thing. Flying in when you're not punching in and you're not doing bring the artist in to punch in, if you're flying in, it's down to milliseconds. And the problem is, if you have to correct that millisecond difference, you have to digitally alter the track.
They do that. They've done it all. All these songs are digital first. Yeah, that's where
but you're not following me though. In other words, if I'm gonna fly in a missing thump on a snare drum, I could take that from anywhere and it's gonna be exactly the same.
Yeah, I know.
If I'm gonna take John's line from earlier or later in the song and fly it in, if it's off by a millisecond, I then have to use digital software to stretch or shorten that file.
Yeah, I know, the mono is the same.
Right.
You know, just take the mono and separate that, which is what they did on some of these tracks anyway. So that's my part.
Interesting.
Like, for example, when they fixed Day Tripper, remember the third verse, there's a dropout?
Yeah.
And back in 2001, when they put out One, they fixed it. And it's still like that now. So to me, that was a dropout and a fix. So why not, on an obvious mistake at this point, just fix that? That was my only problem with Please.
Like I said, we don't know if it was tried or not, Rob. And my thought is that if it was tried and they were going to have to actually like digitally alter the recording, somebody drew the line.
Well, I would have no problem either way if they fixed it.
I agree with you. Yeah. But other people would be like, no, you know, now you've actually digitally altered that piece.
It doesn't bother me. I know it was an edit when they first did it, and it was just a mistake. But, you know, then they didn't care because it was stereo in 1963.
Right.
But that would be one of my...
What else, Rob, did you...
All My Loving, as much as I love the mix on it, you know, there is a version out there in collector land, and it was released legitimately with the hi-hat open. This is the place to put it. You know, the five hi-hat open... on All My Loving, and it's there, and it wouldn't have hurt to put it on this collection. It
does just like the whispering at the beginning of I Feel Fine.
You got it.
Or the James Bond theme in the beginning of Help.
But that I understand.
It was on it originally.
I know.
Well,
that
was only on the American version. It wasn't on the British version.
Understood, but
so to me, but
come on.
I agree with you. A lot of Americans think that's part of. Of the song, and actually
the red side, the second side of the red,
right? And to me, I think it sets up Help perfectly, that 15 seconds dramatic open, and then it goes Help. But I understand why that's not there. That, you know, it's not a Beatles track per se. I understand that, but I know some fans who are gonna say, well, where's it's not even a James Bond theme. I mean, they call it that, but it's James Bond's not in Help.
I know. You know,
some James Bond sounding-ish music.
Yes.
The one thing that bothered me the most, and again, I think this sounds amazing, but two things, really. Well, a couple of things. I'm just going to go through them if you don't mind. But the one that really bothers me is one of my favorite songs of all time, Nowhere Man. It's first of all, it's a little drier. There's not as much echo on the voices, but someone messed up the hi-hat because it's out of sync. No, as a drummer, I noticed it right away. As soon as you, you know, normally you hear, you know, when he's doing it, this one you hear, like it sounds like Ringo doesn't know what he's doing. Listen carefully.
I have to be honest. I listened to it with headphones. Didn't.
It's there.
I didn't hear it.
The hi-hat is out of sync. Absolutely out of sync.
But maybe just on your copy.
Oh, yeah, my copy.
No.
In my life, the harpsichord sounds a little off also, just a little bit. Driving my car, I think the solo is a little bit too low.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, see, I wrote that down as sort of digging it. Like, I just felt that I felt to drive my car. I love the like levelness kind of a very, and you maybe hear it all. But yeah, no, I do get that. Yeah.
And then the other thing is sometimes the cleanliness can show off not the mistakes of a player, but like for me, because it's so gorgeous in terms of the drums, 8 days a week, the drums sound a little sloppier. Like when he goes, what do you call it? Right before he's saying 8 days a week, it sounds a little sloppier when he does some fills. And because it's very clean, and when there's a nice echo on it and it's not as clean, it just gets mixed in a little more. But right now it's so clean, you're like, oh, Ringo, all right.
That wasn't it's not a Wilbury anymore.
Yeah, right, exactly. We'll bury it in the mix.
Well, you know, the thing about 8 days a week is on Beatles 1, it sort of doesn't fade up. It sort of starts even.
Right.
Sort of. And now they've gone back to it fades up. So that's kind of interesting that they've gone back to that. Beatles 1 really should have been the fade up because that's where the single was.
Correct.
This is where the more even intro, which I happen to like a lot, should be on. But you know, there's no mixes from the 2015 Beatles 1 on this. Everything is modern on this, you know, the 62 to 66 album we have now.
Right.
So, you know, it's interesting. And that's only like 7 years ago or 8 years ago, you know.
And digitally, it's 3,000 years ago, Rob.
It almost seems that way, Tony. But, you know, it's kind of interesting because now everyone says, well, let's do the whole catalog again. No. We just got that. You know, we've had 5-6 records now where they've remixed everything. What, are we going to go back and do it again?
Send us all free downloads of all those when you redo them, and we want it anyway.
The only other thing is Michelle sounds fantastic, the bass, but Ringo's rim shot is a little too loud. It gets distracting a little bit, you know, because he plays a rim on it instead of a snare, rim of the snare, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it sounds a little too loud to me. It's sort of almost distracting a little bit. It's too much. I think it's a little too up in the mix. But again, these are not things that I hated. These are just things that I just were like, things that make you go, that's all.
I thought Michelle it's more like the mono mix and the evenness. Where the stereo always sounded all over the place, and now it's much more even. Though I don't think they based it on the mono mix, and which he didn't do. Like with the White Album, they were matching the mono in most places, and the same with Pepper. This I didn't see that as much with these new stereo mixes.
Agreed.
That you know we have to match the mono. These are more okay. This is 2023. Let's do something that we don't have to go back and match our what previously modern. Was.
Yeah.
And maybe because it's not the original album. This is, something, from 73. So it's a little different in the presentation. So
I'm sorry, Rob.
No, I'm done.
I can't help but feel, that it all comes back around to that idea of, as I was saying earlier, thinking of the Beatles as a live entity. When I go see a band in concert, especially a really good band, the two vocalists are up front doing some really great harmonies. There's a lead guitar part being played, but my eyes are darting all around the stage and I want to see what the drummer's doing in the background. Whether it's perfect or not, I still want to see and experience what the drummer's up to while this other stuff's happening. My eyes are focusing on different things on the stage at different moments, and I'm when you think about it, when your eyes hit something, when you're seeing a live performance, you hear that part more enhanced in your ears.
Yes.
And to me, what Giles and these guys have seemed to have strived to do was give us the ability to hear the Beatles as a live act and kind of go, yeah, this is what this may have sounded like in the studio. You know, he talks about, well, you know, when a band's playing live, they're not standing 3 feet from each other or there's a spread and there's a feeling of, you know, oh, I can focus on the drummer and I can focus on the, now it's kind of like, and you're right, Mitch, to your point, that's true. Some of it is, you know, maybe quote too clean, but I think it, because so much of 62 to 66 is now comprised of the 2023 mixes, I think we get an overall feel like that from the whole album.
Yeah, I guess so. So we've talked about some of the tracks. Let's talk about the new songs, and we'll go around and maybe substitute, or maybe not, depending on what you guys think. Now, again, I'm just going to read off the 12 new songs. I Saw Her Standing There, Twist and Shout, This Boy, Roll Over Beethoven, You Really Got a Hold on Me, You Can't Do That, If I Needed Someone, Taxman, Got to Get You Into My Life, I'm Only Sleeping, Here, There, and Everywhere, and Tomorrow Never Knows. Now, Alan Steckler and Alan Klein purposely did not put any covers on the first one. They didn't want it. Now we've got three with Twist and Shout, Roll Over Beethoven, and You've Really Got a Hold on Me. So, Tony, I'm going to start with you. Tell me what should not, in your opinion, what should not have been on here, and maybe tell me a couple of songs that you would have substituted. And it doesn't have to be in the order that it should have been. Just tell me, you know, I didn't want This Boy to be on, but I wanted this. I wanted to maybe hear this. So go ahead.
There's too much damn Revolver.
No, no, there is. You're right.
The rent's too damn high. there's too much damn Revolver. Don't get me wrong, man. I love Revolver.
And we know why.
Okay. But to the detriment of the idea that I am one of these people who the 1, 2, 3, and I know it's not their best album. Don't anybody jump on me here, but the opening 1, 2, 3 punch of Beatles for Sale is probably one of, next to the 1, 2, 3 punch on the White Album. I love the 1, 2, 3 punch on Beatles for Sale, which is duplicated probably because I grew up loving Beatles 65.
Right.
So when you get No Reply, I'm a Loser, Babies in Black, 1, 2, 3, bang, bang, bang. Wow, that's amazing. So for me, two tunes from Revolver go, Got to Get You Into My Life, and I'm Only Sleeping.
Now, hang on, Tony. Mm-hmm. Can I rebut one thing?
Yes.
Got to Get You Into My Life
was a hit.
In 76, it was a hit. See, how do you take that out? Wait, hang on. Why would you leave I'm Only Sleeping or Here, There, and Everywhere?
Well, no, I'm Only Sleeping's out.
Oh, okay.
I said that. Got to Get You.
You just said
Here, There, and Everywhere is a McCartney classic.
Okay.
At this point, got to be honest. I know Got to Get You Into My Life opened the 79 tour. I know Got to Get You Into My Life was a hit in 76. Nobody remembers that. Those songs,
I think you're right.
No. Non-Beatle fans don't remember that. Here, There, and Everywhere has probably been played at more weddings than Got to Get You Into My Life ever will. There, and Everywhere is a standard at this point. Okay. So to me, if you're going to pull, and you got to keep George, you can't pull a George track, so Taxman stays. Tomorrow Never Knows is,
you can pull a George track if you're going to put another one from a different album.
Yes, you're right, but I don't want one. I didn't write that. I'm wrong. Look at that. I'm wrong. I actually wrote underneath. I'm sorry. Wind that back. You could replace Taxman with either. Now here's where I go off the deep end. With either Don't Bother Me or I Need You.
Oh, okay.
Don't Bother Me, George's first composition. All right. Rhythmically, man, I can't wait to hear that song with the MAL software. Cannot wait to hear what that weird ass polyrhythm thing's going to sound like at the beginning of that song. So you replace Taxman with either Don't Bother Me or I Need You. But my feeling is to really, like, you pull off Got to Get You In My Life, you pull off I'm Only Sleeping, Here, There, and Everywhere has to stay because it's a standard. Tomorrow Never Knows must stay because that is, by John's account, by so many people's accounts, that was the gateway into the Beatles' next era.
Era, yeah.
And you replace those two with either No Reply and I'm a Loser, but you're going to get that argument of Paul's head would explode because you're pulling off a Paul song, Got to Get You to My Life, and you're putting on a John.
We're not worried about their heads exploding. We're worried about, what as fans, what we would have liked.
Well, no, hold it. No, you got to remember that, because remember in Anthology 2, Paul paid for the repressing of the CDs because there wasn't a Paul song until track 7.
Right, right. So here's my real feeling as a fan would be Got to Get You to My Life goes, I'm Only Sleeping goes, and it's replaced with No Reply and I'm a Loser, back to back. If you have to do a McCartney song, believe it or not, because again, one of the first songs he ever wrote, you do I'll Follow the Sun and I'm a Loser. And I'll Follow the Sun with the MAL software, I think, is going to sound absolutely gorgeous.
Well, let me ask you a question then, Tony. You mentioned the 1-2-3 punch of Beatles for Sale. Why not put Babies in Black instead? Because, hear me out, it was a concert staple for a long time.
And nobody knows that but a hardcore fan. No Reply is always written about as like John's the first foray into something, you know, beyond boy-girl relationship. And I'm a Loser is the Dylan thing. So there's written up, like if you go to a website and you Google Babies in Black, you don't get much. It was played in the concerts in 64. It's one of my personal favorites, but it was played in the concert in 64. No Reply and I'm a Loser has Beatles lore attached to it.
I don't think
Babies in Black was 65, but...
I meant 65. I'm sorry.
I don't know. I think, first of all, it's only an hour and 34 with the two discs. So
your argument is put them all on. I get it.
I think, well, you know, do you keep the cover versions? Now, one of the things that I agreed with when they put this together, there were no cover versions. But, you know, why not include, you know, Roll Over Beethoven and, you know, You Really Got a Hold on Me and Twist and Shout. Everyone knows those songs. Twist and Shout was number two in the States. It's become this other song where, you know, it's played in parties and radio stations, not radio stations, you know, stadiums and stuff like that. So
right, not your parties. I'm sorry.
Yes, yeah, not my parties, of course. But I mean, but if you stick with that, then if you're gonna have those three covers, why not have Long Tall Sally there? Why not have Rock and Roll Music, where they just sound on fire, you know, to remind people what a great rock and roll band they were. Plus, they're never gonna release Rock and Roll Music. Not that they should, because I don't want that either. But if you have all this space, a couple of more songs wouldn't hurt in the cover things. Tony, I agree with you. You know, I'm a Loser should definitely be in here. Babies in Black and No Reply, you know, should be in here too. But if you take off the three covers, then you got to replace them. And that's, I wouldn't be a thing. Is there too much Revolver on it?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Seven, right?
But you know what? They didn't have enough Revolver when they first came out. So that's part of it too.
And Revolver's become their, quote, arguably their best album now.
Right. So, you know, and plus you have the space. I mean, there's, like I said, there's tons of space on these two CDs that, you know, you could have put much more, but they didn't want to have too many songs because you don't want to turn into the entire Beatles catalog on the 62 to 66.
Bingo. And then Rob, you gotta think about it too. And again, I'm not disagreeing with you. It would have been fun if there were another 8 tracks besides these, but it comes back to that whole idea of what do you do now sequencing with the vinyls?
Well, that's
do you make the disc 1 and disc 2 the same, and then you have 16 tracks on album 3 and it doesn't play as well, and it's not
You're right, because that's the way they did it on the, you know, if you base it on the vinyl, then it is different. You're right,
right.
Because you can't have 16 songs, especially if they're 3 minutes.
Right.
You know, and you have a different sound. So
That's
a good point. You know, and you can't have a vinyl version that's one way and the CD version that's another. They will not do that.
Ew.
And I understand that because, you know, standardization is important in stuff like this.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know. I mean, You Really Got a Hold of Me. We didn't mention that. Holy crap. I want an just a vocal version of that song.
It sounds great, but
as much as the background playing is fantastic, I'm listening to this for the vocals only, and I'm thinking that Beach Boys box set where you were able to take the backing track off and you just hear the vocals and you're like, oh my God, that song was so vocally perfect.
Just send me the stem tracks on a list.
Well, I guarantee Smokey Robinson is going, I wanted to keep that one on here.
I
never thought of that. Wow.
Hey, Smokey Robinson said that the Beatles covering Motown put them on the map, but also got him a ton of money. Brian Holland, you know, Please Mr. Postman, which could have fit on here also. He said he went out and bought a Cadillac when the Beatles covered Please Mr. Postman. So, or was it Eddie Holland? I forget which one it was. But
which one, the Hollands? Yeah.
It was in that Motown movie with Berry Gordy and Smokey Robinson.
Smokey, yeah.
So to me, you know, you have to match it, but I understand if, you know, we're going to do the, but then they're not matching it anyway. I like the third disc, the third LP being bonus tracks, but I wouldn't want that as a CD. So that's, you know, that's part of, you know, and that's just me, you know, it's different, you know, because the vinyl.
That's an interesting point though, Rob. That really is an interesting point. What would you, you know, would we, well, it wouldn't have been a bonus CD because they wouldn't have given us a, well, they could have just given us a third CD with that album on it. That would have been obnoxious, but they certainly could have done it.
Yeah.
But would we have wanted to play that third disc of the bonus tracks?
Yeah, that's, you know,
that's interesting.
You know, it's you know, we're so used to this presentation. When Springsteen put out the essential Bruce Springsteen, there was a three CD set.
Oh my God!
On purpose, but they said, well, we're not going to. He said, I don't want it charged as a third disc. And if you were able to buy it and find that, it was much cheaper.
And that third disc is just mind blowing.
Yes, it's like, oh wow.
Yeah, all the B-sides, all the, anyway.
Some From Small Things is on there. So so to me, you know, I can understand, you know, both sides of this coin. You know, and to, you know, the Blue Album is a little bit different because the songs are a little bit longer. We're not going to talk about, but it's, but well, yeah, it's another show. But these songs are all shorter.
Right.
Well, so that also helps too.
Let me throw out my songs without substituting, okay? Just for now.
Okay.
I understand why they put stuff like I Saw Her Standing There, because it's the first album, the first song on the first album, and it has the count in of 1, 2, 3, 4, and Now and Then also has a count in. And that's the last song on the, so it's kind of weird. Okay. You know, maybe. I'm not saying that's why they did it, but you know, like Tony, like you said, you know, you don't get much if you Google Babies in Black. Do you really get that much if you Google You Can't Do That? No. So in that argument, I gotta, you know, take you up on that a little. But here's a bunch of my songs, which I think could be, take out whatever you want. It won't be long.
Why?
I'm down. Why
it won't be long?
Because it's so energetic and it hits you in the face the minute it goes on.
Okay.
But I'm down. Now, unless they're saving for an album of B-sides, because they, you know, they could do Beatle B-sides.
Also redo Past Masters too.
They could do it, but
they can put out a singles, American singles, and British singles box set.
You said it before, Long Tall Sally, Rob. If you're going to put out a cover, that was a concert closer for almost every tour. I mean, so I don't want to hear it. That, you know, people know that. I'm a Loser, definitely. Babies in Black. Do You Want to Know a Secret for George?
Oh.
Why not? You made a face. What's the difference between that and You've Really Got a Hold on Me?
You Really Got a Hold on Me is just a magnificent performance. And
I guarantee you more people know Do You Want to Know a Secret because the doo-da-doos than You Really Got a Hold on Me.
Well, it was also a Lennon McCartney song that George sung.
I know, you know, but maybe he would have to dance with you.
Right, that'd be the other one. Do You Want to Know a Secret was number 2 on the charts. So
yeah,
as a single,
but it's a grade B Lennon and McCartney composition.
Yeah, yeah.
No matter how you look at it, it's a grade B Lennon McCartney composition.
Why not give Ringo his due and put Boys on?
Yeah, well, see that. Covers. Wow, That's a really good point, Mitch. If you're going to do the covers and you're going to put on, that's
Ringo
a really
doesn't
good point.
Have a lot on this at all. What does Ringo have on this? Yellow Submarine?
Yeah. You're absolutely right, man, because you're giving George's due with Roll Over Beethoven, but Ringo's Boys would have been a great.
Ringo, the
or do you pick I Want to Be Your Man? Or do you pick I Want to Be Your Man?
What goes on?
What goes on now? I mean,
it doesn't belong here. You know, it's a throwaway song. It's
another beat composition, but I Want to Be Your Man was the Stones' first single.
But also, Boys was so well produced on the Please Please Me album.
Yeah.
That the Mal, I would love to hear the Mal on that. Oh my God.
Yeah.
I should have known better. I think I should have known better.
Are they?
Don't tell me that's a grade B McCartney.
No, hell no. Ever. But is it possible that somewhere along the line
is not really represented as much as I want? Like, And I Love Her and A Hard Day's Night. But what else?
Right.
That would be a good choice.
Can't Buy Me Love. Okay.
And talk about the Mal software. What's Tell Me Why going to sound like?
But what's No Reply going to sound like? Come on.
Right.
The other one, you said I Need You, but the one that I think should have been on from Help, probably one of the best pop songs ever, You're Going to Lose That Girl.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
That shows harmonies.
Wow.
It's a great pop song. I mean, it's one of my favorite Beatles songs ever.
And dumb question, Mitch, was that the A or the B side of the Aborted Love Song single?
It was the B.
It was the B. Okay, but still, Girl was the A.
But wow, can you imagine you're going to lose that girl on this, coming blaring out of your speakers with Mal?
That would be interesting. I think, and plus the Mal system would soften Ringo's bongo playing in that.
Oh, I would hope so.
Bongo fury with Ringo.
Oh, my goodness. As a drummer, I'm so embarrassed by that, because I swear to God, someone just gave him a joint and said, go into the booth and record. And he went, okay.
Think of my buddy always used to say he would pick up one of those little like the little wind up monkeys to play. Ringo on his bongos.
He's not in tune at all.
It's
not
brilliant.
In time.
Yeah, it's not, and it's also loud too.
Would it be fun if we find out that it was actually Paul? Anyway,
No, Paul suggesting Ringo do that.
Hey, Ringo, I think you should play like this. Anyway,
and everybody's going, what?
What?
Meanwhile, smoking in the joint. Corner, smoking the joint, going, yeah, great.
Well, I like your choices, Mitch. I think they, in many cases fit. But if you're gonna have no covers. Or some covers, and they could have added some more. But I understand you don't want too many covers.
Well, that's the thing. You don't want it. But I do think out of all my songs, the one that makes the most sense is probably Boys. Because Ringo doesn't have anything except Yellow Submarine on here.
I'm going to go out on a crazy-ass limb right here.
Uh-oh.
Look at here's me. One that we like. You just don't go, oh, yeah, well, maybe that's an idea. Where's Leave My Kitten Alone?
That's interesting.
Where's Leave My Kitten Alone?
It's on the anthology.
It's on an anthology, but it was going to be a single. Where's Leave My Kitten Alone? Tony, where's Soldier of Love?
Tony. Tony, stick with Leave My Kitten. You know why? And wow, Tony, you just blew my mind, because you know what? You just put on a brand new Beatles single, and you could have put on the Red and Aborted Beatles single.
Right. Right.
Forget about Soldier Love. That was not,
right.
But that my friend, would be interesting.
Right.
Then it could have been like, we just gave you a Beatles single that's brand new.
Yeah.
And one that should have been brand new in the Red era.
Yep.
That would be
interesting.
Hell.
I like that. I couldn't see them doing that, but it would
have been. Bonus track on the CD single of Now and Then and right in the middle, Now and Then, Leave My Kitten Alone, Love Me Do. The new single, the lost single, the first single.
Yeah, well.
Wow.
Anyway.
I just think that how they did it is interesting. There's several ways they went, and they seem to cover them all, whether there was on purpose or not. I think, like we said, there could be more songs, but then, do you want 30 songs on each disc? You don't want that either. So One thing I just wanted to talk about before we end, I love this boy. That ending, you know how there was always like this obvious edit? You don't notice that on this remix.
Right.
No.
It's where you just stop and then it goes, this boy. Whether that was supposed to be an aborted guitar solo or whatever, it's been talked about over the years. I really like this boy's, the mix of that. And what else was there? You can't do that. One thing I noticed in it, you can't do that, is George's guitar playing, because it's always been known that John was playing lead rhythm, but there's these little intricate things with George's playing in that song that you now hear much better.
Happens with Please Please Me as well. The little
guitar. Yeah. So I was very impressed with that, and I was glad to hear that. And I've always thought A Hard Day's Night had a pretty decent stereo mix, but I can't wait for that to be done too. But the Rubber Soul is next, so that's, we know about that. And that's about it, really. I mean, I think everything else has been really good. The Rubber Soul stuff's just incredible. It would have been interesting, and we're not going to get to it at this point, but I've always loved the song track version of Nowhere Man. The mix on that.
Yeah.
But if you think about it, it's 24 years old already. So, you're not going to get that on an album that's supposed to be focusing on these recent mixes, very recent mixes.
And most people are comparing this one to that. You can't. It's two different people, two different
times.
Right.
And it was also for the movie, too. And it was, they were doing it for the movie. So, so everything else I like, I didn't listen as intensely to the stuff that was already remixed in 2022, the Revolver stuff. I didn't listen to that as much because
you don't have to.
We've already heard it.
We talked about it.
Right. So, one more thing, if they changed it on Revolver, but they kept it here, Yellow Submarine now opens in the stereo mix with the guitar chord, which in the stereo original version, it wasn't there.
Right. It's now going to be the go-to for them.
Right.
Yeah, I liked it cleaner with no chord at the open. But everything else...
Overall, this is a great album compilation. I think Giles and team, because it's a team.
Yeah, Sam O'Kell.
Sam O'Kell and everybody else there, including all the people at Peter Jackson's team. I think it makes for a great listening experience. It really does. So.
But we've done, like I said, we've done this show three times already, or a variation of it. And like I said, this album probably gets re-released in 10 years anyway.
I don't know about that.
But. And we probably should, Mitch, too, before we sign out formally. Just we should probably also thank all the kind folks at Apple and at Universal for kind of letting us, as they have in the last few years, be part of this experience. And and I'm saying it not to be butt kissy, but to sort of essentially say to all of you who are listening and have been enjoying the interview that we did with Giles, or even just coming at this in the angle that we're coming to it, has been through the kindness of the folks at Universal and Apple. So
The last thing I'll say, and it will be the last thing, so to both of you, shut up now. I'm kidding. The last thing I'm going to end with is that I will say, Tony, based on the event we went to, I was very nervous about the Red and the Blue after what we heard, because we heard it in a different way, and I was very nervous.
Likewise.
I was very, very happy when we finally got the tracks and heard them the way they were supposed to be heard, just as people from Apple told us we should wait for, and... It's amazing. So anyway, if you're thinking about getting this album and you're hesitating, don't hesitate. It's really good. Anyway, I have been your moderator, Mitch Axelrod, for this Red episode. And even though I'm wearing blue, and Tony's wearing blue and Rob's wearing blue. What the hell?
Oh, look behind me.
Oh, well, that's sort of like a sepia, not really.
Well, great. It's just for the sepia album, damn it.
That'll be next. But anyway, next I've been your moderator, Mitch Axelrod, and joining me has been Rob Leonard.
Hello and goodbye. Oh, that's the next album.
That's the next one. And Tony?
Take care, everybody. See you soon.
Thanks for listening and watching, and we will see you for the Blue album real soon. And we won't be blue.
Fab Four Free For All was edited and produced by Tony Triguardo at Word of Mouth Studios in Westbury, New York.
The opening and closing theme is My Dolly by the band The Badge, featuring longtime listener Jeff Slate, available on its debut album Digital Retro and recent Best Of compilation, as well as from the Fab Four Free For All website.
Thanks for listening to Fab Four Free For All.